The United States, as the world knows, will never start a war. We do not want a war. We do not now expect a war. This generation of Americans has already had enough, more than enough, of war and hate and oppression.
Coming in from London, from over the pole, flying in a big airliner, chicken flying everywhere around the plane. Could we ever feel much finer? Coming into Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys. Don't touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Get to Mexico. No, he couldn't look much stranger. Walking in a hall with his things and all. Smiling, said it was a Lone Ranger. Coming into Los Angeles. Bringing in a couple of keys. Don't touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Walking on the moving floor, tripping on the escalator. Hell, the man in the line, and she's blowing his mind, thinking that he's already made her. Coming into Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys. Don't touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man.
This is Ron Puhalski for WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia Counties. And I'm speaking with my friend Alice Brock, who is over in Provincetown. How are you today, Alice?
I'm pretty good for an old lady.
Pretty good. Good. You sound terrific. I remember after being introduced to you by my friend Joe, your dad, introduced me to you in Provincetown when you were living in the East End, and mm-hmm. It was just a lovely little apartment, and I think you had perhaps, did you say you had been in that apartment many times from your childhood, I remember?
Yes. We actually lived in the downstairs apartment of that house.
Ah, okay.
When Joe worked for Peter Hunt, we were there every summer.
Terrific. And one of the things that sticks in my mind was that you were near a butcher who you were introduced me to. And you said it's always important to have the butcher as a friend.
Yes, and, always make friends with your butcher.
Always. Anyhow, how did you get into the restaurant business, given that you were an activist and an artist, really?
It's nothing I ever wanted to do, but it was an idea for me that my mother had.
Ah.
I was living in the church, and there were a bunch of kids living with us, Arlo included. And I was cooking for all of them, lots of spaghetti. We didn't have any money. And my mother said, you know, you're cooking for all these kids. Nobody's giving you any money. Why don't you open a little restaurant? There's a diner for sale in Stockbridge. So I said, okay, that sounds good. What did I know?
What did you know? Well, I must say that I really enjoyed what I was up in Provincetown the first time you gave me a copy of your cookbook, which I still have and use till today. It's very straightforward, and I like the philosophy of your cooking, which is you can pretty much do anything with anything, no matter
right.
how little you have. If you don't have enough dishes, you can just get a hubcap for an extra one, I think you told me that one time.
I was pretty reckless in those days.
Yeah, but the best is, which I actually told my friend Marie this past week, who was having trouble making spring rolls and they were falling apart. I said, well, you just have to make believe that that's what you wanted them to be. And I think that is a good philosophy.
Bravado and confidence.
Exactly.
Covers a lot of ground.
Yes.
I lost my way down the line. Ain't been back home for some time.
Husband and I, Ray, my ex-husband, we were working at a little private school up in the Berkshires, but it wasn't like other prep schools. It was very liberal and international and all of that stuff, and it wasn't even certified. That's how we got jobs there. I worked in the library, which pretty much means telling kids to shut up. You know, they get sent to the library because they're bad. Nobody
right.
goes to the library just for books. Not in school. So, and Ray taught shop. I always said he taught manly arts. And Arlo was one of the students. And Ray played the guitar. And, of course, Arlo played the guitar. And everybody was playing the guitar. It was,
right.
you know, the early 60s. And so he used to come over with a bunch of kids over to our little cottage on campus. And we all just used to sit around and sing songs and stuff like that. So we got to know him. And then we left the school after 1 year, and we were redoing the church. Again, my mother. She bought us the church as a wedding present.
Right. She
was
in
real... And the church was, it wasn't insulated, it was... It had been built in an area that they thought was going to be the main part of town, but it, for some reason it wasn't the main part of town, and so there wasn't much of a congregation, but there was this huge building. And so it was for sale, and my mother thought, well, Ray's an architect, he can do something with it. And she bought it for us. So all the kids who, in the 60s, you know, kids went to college for about 2 weeks.
Right.
And then they hit the road. That was the way it was. And so Arlo went to college for 2 weeks and came back to the Berkshires and came and lived with us. And a lot of the kids did from Stockbridge School, and it was okay with their parents because we were teachers. And so that's how I got to know him.
A little dreaming, a little singing.
Well, thank you, John. And just let me say it was mighty nice for me to have you over to the show. But before I go, something you ought to know.
What's that?
You can get anything you want. You can get anything you want. at Alice's restaurant. I walk right in and surround the bank. About a half a mile from the railroad track, you can't get anything that you want at Alice's restaurant.
Okay, listen, when you get time, I'd like to have you back. Okay.
Bring my phone and I'll be packed.
Bring your guitar.
I'll bring my guitar.
In your car.
In my car. Can I bring my dog?
Your dog? Your frog? Is that on the log?
Yeah, we'll do a monologue.
How about your cat? Bring that?
I'll bring my stash.
Hey, you can bring anything you want from Alice's restaurant.
Was Alice's restaurant his first recording?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was.
Uh-huh. How did the movie come about? I mean, Arthur Penn was the director of Bonnie
well,
and Clyde.
Well, you know, Arthur Penn lived in Stockbridge, where my little restaurant was, and he had eaten there a few times.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere along the line, he got hold of the song, and he thought it would make a great movie. He had done Bonnie and Clyde, and he was doing kind of an Americana series, so he just took a lot of liberties with our lives, and there was the movie.
I'm Arlo Guthrie, and you've probably listened to or heard about a thing called Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. And now, it's the name of a movie based on my song about Alice's Restaurant.
You hippie perversion!
What's that funny smell?
What funny smell?
About that beautiful Thanksgiving dinner, which produced an incredible, amazing pile of garbage, which we tried real hard to dump at the dump. So I'm inviting all of you to meet me and Alice and Ray and Officer Obie and all kinds of groovy people doing all kinds of groovy things that are all part of the Alice's Restaurant anti-massacre movement that you can join by digging this film or by singing the song in four-part harmony with feeling. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back. Just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
At Alice's Restaurant.
Your route, I will call it, from Brooklyn to the Berkshires to Provincetown. That's a pretty interesting history to me. You were quite an activist in New York City. I remember you were involved with one of the Cuban groups, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. I was a big fan of Castro.
Right.
And I still am. But Cuba was dreadful. And what he did was just miraculous.
Planes of his own country's airline have been impounded for debts since they landed in this country. The scene at the airport offered the confusion that has come to be associated with the comings and goings of the Cuban leader. And here's how it looked and sounded.
You took our airplanes. Here in the United States, the authority robbed our airplanes. And the Soviet claimed the airplane.
That is the American people, that not your friends?
The American people, I think, is good people.
The American authority.
Yes, they have not to charge with the guilty of all the lies that publicity tell to them. The people of the United States is good people. Harlem people is wonderful people. You, the reporters, are wonderful. You, the writers, are wonderful. But you are not the owners. Newspaper belongs to the monopoly here.
And, of course, nobody's been told the truth about them.
Right.
Because we hold sway over most of those smaller islands and South America, Central America, Africa. They are all full of dictators that have been set up by the United States or some other large country with a lot of power. And it was just a nightmare. You know, they didn't have their own fresh vegetables because everything was owned by Dole Fruit and those big companies, and stuff was grown and canned right there and sent to America, and they had to go, and when they went to the grocery store, they had to buy canned stuff from America. But of course it was worse than that. Batista was a monster and murdered a lot of people, like some of the dictators in the Mideast are murdering people now.
Exactly. It still goes on.
So I was very politically active. It was the 60s, and we were all anti-war, anti-draft, anti-nuclear, and we were all for civil rights, and it just was a big package.
What do you think of the vote in Colorado and Washington regarding marijuana in this last election?
I think it's a great idea because the war on drugs, it's a war, all right, but it's really a war on poor young people who are selling a few joints and they get put in jail. And so many people are in jail for a little bit of marijuana that it's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining so many lives. And if it was made legal, then it could be taxed like everything else. And I bet they could raise enough tax money on marijuana sales to get us out of debt. And also, I think it's a terrific drug, really, if memory serves.
And if you go chasing rabbits and you know you're going to fall, tell them a hookah smoking caterpillar has given you the call. Call Alice when she was just small.
Well, I do. Yes, I agree. I hope that it really, I mean, we certainly have these problems up in this area where they'll bust someone for 6 plants on their back porch. And it's a total, you know, waste of resources and ruin someone's life for nothing.
Yeah, really.
That's
for nothing.
Absolutely.
You know, I think shoplifting is probably worse or vandalism. But smoking pot, it's not hurting anybody.
No.
And the thing is, all these attempts have not worked. People are doing drugs if they want to do drugs, just like people drink alcohol.
Exactly.
And look at the tax they put on alcohol.
Right.
Makes those states rich.
Yeah. I mean, that was the the prohibition period, you know, that I think is why it was repealed. Mainly because
sure.
of taxes and revenue.
Ron, this is a capitalist country.
Yes.
And that means the most important thing is the bottom line.
The dollar.
And if money can be made, anything's okay.
Jumping back a bit to Provincetown, I mean, your history in Provincetown goes back a lot longer than just the past 20, 30 years. I mean, I must say that the your studio where you are now, I remember, it had been a chapel or something, and I had a real good time.
I might have a calling.
Yes.
There used to be a private chapel in this house, and I still have some of the stuff from it.
Yeah. I remember
that. Just amazing. It was consecrated by a bishop from New Bedford. So maybe I'm a secret holy person.
Have you ever thought of starting your own religion?
I do have my own religion, actually. But I don't go out and preach it to everybody. But I live...
You live it.
...according to my rules and not anybody else's. And that's why I'm poor and happy.
I remember the house was chock-a-block from the basement to the top with so many things and loading them a couple of times, going down to Wellfleet to the flea market. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed that. Well, we had to buy the house furnished with everything in it, and there was some pretty strange stuff in it. I mean, the chapel was, you know, there was an altar and a prie-dieu and a baptismal font and all the stations of the cross, and then the whole house was full of all these strange religious icons, and the guy was a very religious person. He was French-Canadian Catholic, and he had a kind of a, I don't know, kind of a gruesome approach to religion, because all these martyred saints, he painted pictures of these martyred saints that had their eyes poked out with hot pokers, and it was kind of gory. Good flea market.
Yes, indeed. And so what are you up to with your art now? Are you still doing any of the beach rocks, which I think are, you know, just magnificent?
Oh, yeah, I do beach rocks, and I draw on rocks. I've been doing that for about 40 years or more, but I always used to just kind of throw them back on the beach. I really enjoyed the idea of putting them, and I still do put them, I drop them in people's gardens or in a coat pocket that where somebody's jacket is hanging up, or supermarket. It's fun. It's so fun to think about people finding them. I've met people who have found them in some pretty far out places too.
Right.
Then when I moved to Provincetown, at one point I started selling them. And now that I have a little gallery in the downstairs of my house, and I also have a website, alicebrock.com. I sell the beach stones on there, and I also have paintings, some books that I've written, and right now I'm even selling some memorabilia from my restaurants and posters and strange things that I've accumulated.
The beach rocks are like street art on the beach.
Yes.
I think, and well, I think it's great that you have the site that people can also kind of check out what you're up to.
And I'm also going to mention it on Facebook, which has turned into a nightmare.
Yes.
Probably for a lot of us. And of course, I have stuff hanging up in the gallery. Some of it's pretty funny.
Is How to Massage Your Cat still in print?
Well, actually, it just went out of print, but I loaded up on them, so they're still available for me, and I would be glad to autograph them to anybody who wants one.
Super.
You can
well,
get them at my website, or if you come to Provincetown, of course, you get to meet the real thing, and I'll...
Yes, 69 Commercial right Street, correct?
Yes, 69 yeah. Commercial Street, in what they call the West End.
The West End, yes. You've always been an artist first. That's the and the true... to your heart and soul, I think.
Yes. You know, ever since I was a little kid, I drew pictures, I made up stories and illustrated them. I did all kinds of things with odds and ends that I picked up. I used to carve little figures out of sticks of chalk, and I made movies out of adding machine tapes. I made two slits in a shoebox, and I would pull this tape through, and it had little pictures on it that told a story. So I've always been doing that, and I've always wanted to live in Provincetown. This was my plan.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not that I really had a plan, but my heart's desire was to live in Provincetown and be an artist.
And you began in Provincetown. Yeah. You followed your heart, and that's the way to go.
Exactly so. I was just talking to somebody the other day, and he said, well, how much have you changed? You think? I said, I don't think I've changed at all. I have very strict standards of behavior and the approach to life and how you treat people. And whether it's popular or whether it does me any good or whether it's old-fashioned, I don't really care. I live by my own rights, and I do what I think is right, not what's popular or what's going to make me money.
So what are you up to this week for the holiday this year? Are you going to, you know, relax
well,
a little bit?
I'm going to have Thanksgiving here in Provincetown with some friends. I'd love to go to the Berkshires because all my, you know, we're still all friends. All the people from the 60s were just always in touch with each other and there for each other. And every Thanksgiving, a friend, Benno Friedman, throws a big Thanksgiving dinner party, which has gotten so huge. Because now everybody has children and grandchildren, and there's hardly any room at the table anymore.
Uh-huh.
There must be about 60 or 70 people. Everybody makes something, and it's a great party, just a great party. People come, you know, people are in Boston, people are in New York, and people are in California. Even people who live in Europe come over for the Thanksgiving. It's really special.
Soul food, talking about soul food. Big fat juicy hams. Soul food. Talking about soul food, food. Collard greens. Hot cornbread.
Back to thinking about music, talking about music a bit again. Did you know and have be friends with and hang out with other musicians besides Arlo back in the day?
Not too many that are famous now.
Uh-huh.
My dear friend Rick Robbins, who was actually the guy who dumped the garbage with Arlo. It wasn't the guy in the movie.
Ah.
he writes his own music and plays the guitar, and he's got a few CDs out.
I'm gonna stick around, don't have to go. I think I'll go down the street just to see where it goes. I could get to like this town, you never know. Hey, there's a theater down there, I wonder what's on tonight. I haven't seen a good show in a while, maybe it'll be alright. You never know, you never know, you never know. You never know what might happen. Everything could change in the next 5 seconds. You never know from day to day. You never know.
Let's see, who else?
I remember you talking about, I think, Dave Van Ronk one time where we were listening to some of his music, I think.
When I came back from Luang Prabang, I didn't have a thing where my balls used to hang, but I had a wooden medal and a fine harangue. Now I'm a fucking hero. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me. Mourn your dead land of the free. You wanna be a hero, follow me. And now the boys all envy me. I fought for Christian democracy with nothing but air where my balls used to be. Now I'm a fucking hero. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me. Like 1 in 20 cannon thunder into the bloody wild blue yonder for a patriotic ballless wonder. Now I'm a fucking hero. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me. In Luang Prabang there is a spot where the corpses of your brothers rot, and every corpse is a patriot. Every corpse is a hero. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me. Mourn your dead land of the free. If you wanna be a hero, follow me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I met him. I wasn't really good friends with him, but I met him in the village when I was just 18 or something, or younger. The way I met him was, you know, people say, can I crash at your pad tonight? So I was in New York, and I guess I didn't have my own place to live. So one night I found myself crashing at his pad, and that was fun. But I'm sure people have become famous or were famous, but I didn't know it then.
Well, sometimes the way I feel, it's just great to be around. And I'm not an artist, but around artists or musicians, and it's not a matter of how famous they are necessarily. It's just, you know, that they're living their life as they need to and their desires, and they find that to be so important.
That's exactly true. I think, you know, those are people who have a passion.
Yeah.
They really have a passion. Maybe now there are kids who want to be rock stars, and they don't even care about music. They just want to have their face on television.
Uh-huh.
But basically, artists they're very creative people with a real passion for what they're doing. And so they're exciting to be around. My house is on the water, and I'm facing a little spit of sand out in Cape Cod Bay with a lighthouse on it.
Yeah, Long Point, I think.
And there's no road out there. You have to walk out there, and
right.
It's quite a walk. That's where I was conceived.
Okay.
So I think I really started in Provincetown, and I hope to end up in Provincetown.
Okay. Well, I hope you get out to the Berkshires again soon. And
yes.
Maybe next
and
year.
And I want to get to Hudson, too.
Definitely.
And maybe Athens.
Enjoy the season and your work in particular. And thanks for talking with us. We're really thankful.
Well,
for
I hope all your listeners have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I hope there are no lumps in your gravy.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Alice.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
This is Ron Puhalski. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with my friend Alice Brock, artist, activist, and inspiration for the protest song Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie. Now we're going to hear the full-length original version of Alice's Restaurant, recorded in 1967. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Foch is a dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before, and with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road, and off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff, and at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile is better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And that's what we did, and sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened. Here they got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car, but when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire, track, footprints, dog-smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, and southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, "Kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt." And I said, "Obie, I can understand you wanting my wallet so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for?" And it said, "Kid, we don't want any hangings." Said, "Obie, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering?" Obie said he was making sure, and friends, Obie was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obi came in with a 27 8x10, covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, "All rise." We all stood up, and Obi stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures. And the judge walked in, sat down with the CNI dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obi looked at the CNI dog. Then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obi came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the, I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, "Kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, "Shrink, I want to kill. And I want to kill. Kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. 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 Kill." And I started jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill. Kill." And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, "Kill. Kill." And the sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, "You're our boy." Feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man. I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, "What do you want?" He said, "Kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested?" And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped right there and said, "Kid, did you ever go to court?" I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and stopped me right there and said, "Kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid!" And I walked over to the bench there, and there's Group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There's mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers. Father Ape was sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one day was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest Father Raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage." He said, "What were you arrested for, kid?" And I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry eyeball and all kinds of mean, nasty things, till I said, "And creating a nuisance." And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father rape, and all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things, until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, "Kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and else kind of thing you got to say, pretend to about the crime. Want to know the rest of the officer's name, and else kind of thing you got to say." And it talked for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words: "Kid, you rehabilitated yourself." I went over to the sergeant and said, "Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on a Group W bench, 'cause you wanna know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug." He looked at me and said, "Kid, we don't like your kind. And we're gonna send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is 'cause you may know somebody in a similar situation, or you may be in a similar situation. And if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, 'Shrink, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant,' and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is, the Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here, sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
That was horrible. You want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud. Or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. And this time with four-part harmony and feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. All right now.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Excepting Alice.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Say, walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Da 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 da.
At Alice's.